Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for standing by. Welcome to the GE Shipping earnings call on declaration of its financial results for the quarter ended December 31, 2022. At this moment, all participants are in the listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct the question and answer session. At that time, if you have a question, please press star and one. I now hand over the conference to Mr. G. Shivakumar, ED and CFO at the Great Eastern Shipping Company Limited, to start the proceedings. Over to you, Mr. Shivakumar.
Hi. Thank you. Good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for joining us for this conference call. Let me quickly first take you through the presentation. Yeah, Mr. Bharat Chhoda, Deputy Chairman and Managing Director, is here to take questions. We are very happy to take your questions on the company and what's been happening in the markets. Let's go ahead with the presentation. Again, we might make forward-looking statements. It is not our intention to give any projections or forecasts on profitability. Highlights. For the first time ever, our profits have crossed 1,500 crores. Our previous highest was in the super cycle, where we were just short of 1,400 crores. In the 9 months, we have a consolidated profit of 1,800+ crores. Our consolidated net asset value has moved up and crossed 1,000 rupees per share. A year ago, this was about 600 rupees per share. That just shows you what can happen in our business. Also, we have declared three interim dividends in this financial year, totaling to 19.80 rupees per share. Again, the highest dividend in our history. These are the reported highlights. You would have seen this. I'm not going to go much into the numbers unless you have some specific questions. We also have the normalized financials as usual. They are not too different from the reported numbers. The effect of the currency has not been very dramatic on our results, because the business results have, you know, outweighed everything else by so much, by such a big margin. Yeah, we have the net asset value per share, and I mentioned on a consolidated basis, we are in excess of 1,000 rupees. Here on a standalone basis, a year ago, that was in December 2021, we were at 576 rupees per share. Now we are at 890 rupees per share. A lot of this, and we'll come to how it's gone up, how the NAVs have gone up, what has caused them to go up in this period. Remember that this growth of 300+ rupees in net asset value is after taking into account, after having paid out dividends. We paid out, between May and November, we paid out about 16-17 rupees in dividends. These are the key ratios, and we'll leave these aside. These are the EPS, et cetera. Broad management commentary from Mr. Chhoda. Also, we have our highest ever quarterly profit. In nominal terms, the previous quarter was higher, but there we had the advantage of significant profit on sale, which was about 115 crores. If you take out that impact, this quarter's results are higher because the rates have been higher, and we'll look at that as well. The consolidated net asset value per share, as we mentioned earlier, has crossed 1,000 rupees, because of in offshore, we get a range of values for the assets. It's between 1,012 and 1,080 rupees per share. The markets are well poised, are interestingly poised. Tankers have had a very good run in the last three quarters or so. Crude tankers, even more so in the last quarter. The one thing that we've been pointing out for a few quarters now is that the order book is dwindling, and therefore, at least one side of the equation that you have to worry about has been taken out. There's not much new capacity coming in, and we look at the order book statistics. from here on, it'll depend on what happens to demand picking up and what happens when China comes back, because China is a significant demand driver both for oil and for dry bulk commodities. On the offshore market, again, this is something that we pointed out for a couple of quarters now. The market is recovering with oil prices continuing to stay at decent levels where oil exploration production companies can make a profit and can afford to invest at least in production, if not in new exploration. The market has shown signs of significant strength. The effective utilization rate for jack-up rigs, if you take out the rigs which have been cold stacked for quite some time, now we are getting close to 90% for the first time since 2014 when the oil prices collapsed. On the balance sheet front, these cash flows have been exceptionally strong, and we've used the cash flows to pay some dividends. We've also prepaid debt where possible. Just looking at differences between last quarter, that's Q2 and Q3, you see what's happened to crude tankers. 33K has gone up to 60K. Product tankers and LPG have been more or less the same. Dry bulk has dropped off in Q3 versus Q2. But the crude tankers outperformance was so high that it more than compensated for the drop in dry bulk earnings. This is how and why our NAV changed. This we are comparing versus March, so this is the 9-month change in net asset value standalone. We had a change of little under 300 rupees per share, where we've got equal contributions from the cash profit, the cash flows which have been produced by the business, and the increase in fleet value. Again, the reason why we put this here is that this is different from the NAV, from other NAVs that you may look at. So you should not look at it like the NAV of, say, a mutual fund, which if the stock prices fall, you lose what is there in the NAV. Here we are actually, when the earnings are strong, a part of that high asset value is converting into cash flows on a daily or a quarterly basis. And that's what we wanted to show here. It's not just an increase in asset values. It is actual real cash that has come in here. Again, asset values, you never know what happens to them. They could go up further. They could come down. But that 147 rupees per share is actual cash which is accrued to us. This is the 5-year movement in standalone net asset value. In March 2017, we were at 337 rupees per share. Now we are at just shy of 900 rupees per share. Again, just to remind you, we have been paying significant dividends through this period. On a consolidated basis, the story is somewhat similar. We had an increase of about 350 rupees per share in the net asset value, which is contributed about 50-50 between the cash accruals and the fleet value. Looking at what happened in the shipping markets, again, we have gone through this many times in the past. We've had very strong product tanker markets, exceptionally strong product tanker markets since early in the year. So that outperformed for a significant period. The Suezmaxes took some time to catch up, but they had a very good Q4 of calendar 2022. And this is a commentary, and we can, rather than read this commentary or go through it, we can discuss it in the Q&A. And the main cause, of course, for the tanker markets going up was the war in Europe, the Russia-Ukraine war, which resulted in a trade dislocation, which came on top of a fairly tightish market. And that's what really took the markets up in a big way. And it illustrates what happens in our business, which we have said in the past, which is that it takes these events to suddenly take the markets up or down. And basically, you need to be positioned with your fleet to be able to take advantage when the markets go up. And that's why we have a significant spot market exposure most of the time. Looking at dry bulk, the dry bulk was a different story. We had a very strong period in FY22, especially for the smaller vessels. which is the Supramaxes and Cancermaxes. This year has been quite poor. The Cape sizes have suffered a lot versus the previous year, and now we've seen over the last few months that even the Supramaxes and Cancermaxes earnings have come off very significantly, which is the black knotted. Again, steel production, which is the main driver of demand for the biggest driver of demand for bulk carriers, was down, had negative growth. We look forward to it coming back in Cal 23. Unless you have a very significant global recession, you should have positive steel production growth, which means that you should have some dry bulk trade demand growth. LPG earnings have been strong. Again, we don't get much affected by the spot market because we are on time charter. So we don't get affected on a day-to-day basis. Of course, if the spot market is strong when our ships come up for repricing, that comes into the pricing that we receive. Looking at fleet supply, the current order book is at exceptionally low levels. So we are talking of below 5% for both crude and product tankers. We are looking at about 7% for bulk carriers, all of which are historically very low numbers. And as I said, this gives us at least one comfort that the supply side is not challenging. You can see that, you know, in 2008-09, these order books went up in excess of, you know, 50%, 60%, 70%. And that was a really worrisome market. At, you know, single digits like this is a positive for the market going forward. As I said, you still need demand to help in the overall equation, but at least one side is taken care of. The LPG order book is significantly higher than this. LPG carriers, the order book is about 21%. Still, not as comfortable as this, but still we have significant trade growth there, which hopefully should take up some of those ships. Looking at asset prices, obviously asset prices have moved, and we saw the impact on the net asset value. Asset prices have moved significantly over the last couple of years, especially for the tankers. Dry bulk asset prices have come down by about between 20 and 30% from the peak early this year. Scrapping has been very poor. Again, all of this is creating an overhang of scrapping, which is a little bit of a safety net for us. If the markets are very weak, you have a chance that there will be significant scrapping, which takes out some of the fleet and therefore brings demand supply back into balance. Looking at the offshore business, the Middle East has been a big driver of incremental demand, and there are a lot of rigs which have been going in there. There's a lot of demand for jack-up rigs there. And so Saudi Arabia and UAE have taken in a lot of rigs. They have publicized their targets for increasing production capacity, and they are taking in rigs in order to try to meet those targets. So rig utilization is now close to 90% on an effective basis. And when I say effective, I mean if you take out the rigs which are cold stacked and you take into account the rigs which have already received contracts and are waiting to go into contract. For instance, today you have 358 rigs under contract. You have another 35 rigs or so which are waiting to go into contract. They've already received contracts and they will go into contract within 2023. So that's a little above 390 rigs. Of the 490 rigs that you have in the fleet, about 60 have been are cold stacked, 45 cold stacked for more than 3 years, and therefore will not be really in a position to compete actively in the market unless the market moves up a lot. And therefore we say that the effective utilization has now come close to 90%. It's sort of similar, though not exactly so, for the vessels. It's not at 90, but you've seen on term contracts that we moved up from the low 40% to somewhere around 54-55%. If you take into account, again, cold stacked vessels, you're probably up to 70% or more. And we have seen significant pricing improvements for vessels and for rigs recently. This is just a depiction of the utilization on the chart. We have two rigs coming up for repricing, but that's only in next year. Our repricing, we had the Greater Charu coming off contract in this year. She has received a three-year contract in India. She's been awarded a three-year contract in India, and she will go on to that contract sometime in probably in the middle of FY 2024. Vessels, we have quite a few coming up for repricing, which is a positive in this market, because repricings will, when they come, our contracts will be at better than the previous rates. What's happened here? Okay, I think there's some problem with the presentation, but we are more or less done with it. We continue to trade, so our, in the last quarter itself, we had come down to net cash on a standalone basis and also just about net cash on a consolidated basis. Now we are significantly net cash. Here we are. So on a standalone basis, we have about $80 million more cash than we have debt. On a consolidated basis, this is probably somewhere around $50 million of net cash. While the stock price has moved up, you will see that the net asset value has moved up a lot as well over the last 9 months. So we still continue to trade at a very significant discount to the net asset value. These are the initiatives on environment, and you can go into them when you go into the website. So that brings me to the end of the presentation. We are happy to take questions.
Thank you very much. We will now begin the question and answer session. To ask a question, please click on the Raise Hand button on the toolbar or the Q&A tab to send a question via text. Participants connected on audio may press star and one. The operator will announce your name when it's your turn to ask a question. We will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. First question is from the line of Amit Khetan from Laburnum Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, good evening. I had a couple of questions regarding the offshore business, just to get a better understanding. So, I think there was a recent news about our rig getting on contract at something like $80,000 a day. How does this compare with the previous pricing on the same rig and on the average of the remainder of the three rigs that we have?
Shiv, you want me to answer that?
No, I'll take that. I'll just take that.
Okay.
Yeah. So the, yes, we have received a contract. We don't comment on the rates, but the contract has been done at a rate which is about 75% higher than the current contract running on that rig. So the recently awarded rate is twice the rate, which is more than twice the rate at which the other three rigs are working. The average of the other three rigs.
Got it. Got it. And how should we think about the earnings in the offshore segment between, say, the rigs and the vessels? Like, you know, I'm sure the rigs are, you know, earning a lot more, but could you give a rough sense of the split between the two?
Okay. I don't-
No, I don't think there is no correlation on that.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
So, all that happens is when the rig market moves up, the boat market also goes up. As the CFO has just mentioned, that the rig that we have just repriced at 75% higher, we've also repriced certain boats, and those are being repriced depending on the region they are in, between a 30 to a 60% improvement from their previous numbers.
Got it. Got it. That's helpful.
But, yeah, albeit on a lower base.
Okay. That's it from my side, and all the best.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Abhishek Nekam from BNK Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. This is Abhishek. So, first question on the dry bulk side, rates have corrected very sharply. So, do you think now it has bottomed, or at least there is not significant downside from here on?
So, you know, obviously there can't be much more of a downside, because now you're at operating costs across two sectors. One is the Capesize sector and one is the Supramax sector. So, you know, and some of this is seasonal. So it's not as if it was unexpected. We're very much in line with what was expected. It's typically the time of the year when you have a lot of disruption due to bad weather, both in Brazil as well as in Australia, which are the two main dominant exporting areas. Having said that, if you look at what the forward paper is showing, it's in significant contango. And therefore, what the market is clearly saying is, let the bad, let the disruptive season get over, and we should see an improvement. The extent of the improvement obviously is going to depend on when China really settles down post these lunar holidays of theirs, and how much of that improvement is going to be seen through the manufacturing sector as opposed purely to consumption sector.
Fair enough. And on the dry bulk fleet expansion, so where are the asset values now, and do you think now they are at a range where you would want to, you know, consider buying a few of those?
So as the CFO said, we've now seen somewhere between a 20 and a 30% drop since, let's call it, the last 9 months, which was the peak of this last cycle. It's still a little away from where we would feel comfortable. Now, you know, what's if, let's say, that there is a little, longer duration in Chinese recovery, then maybe asset prices may fall off a little further. So it's something we are closely tracking. We have, we are looking at a couple of ships, but nothing, I could say very honestly, that there's nothing that we've got our teeth into yet.
Fair enough. And just last question from me, when are the LPG ships up for renewal, and is it true that the contract you have currently with the current customer, so the current customer has an option to renew the LPG ships at the old rate?
Yeah, at the current rate.
At the current rate, yes.
Yeah, we have one vessel that comes off, I think it's between April and May, in which there are no further options left. So that's all done and dusted. So that, I think, will get repriced sometime in the month of March. The other three will run, because there are options at the similar rate, they will run through for another 12 months.
Okay, perfect. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Himanshu Bhadir from O3 Capital. Please go ahead.
Hello. Good evening.
Hi.
Am I audible? Yeah.
Yeah.
So my first question is, we bought a AHTSV recently, okay? Can you help us understand the rationale for it? Was there some one-off opportunity to deploy at a very lucrative rate, or the price itself was very cheap?
So basically, Manshu, what happened was that there was ongoing tender in front of us. we saw that there was likely to be a slight shortage in the number of assets that were going to offer under the tender, and we got this opportunity to pick up this asset. I wouldn't say it's cheap, but it wasn't as cheap as it would have been, let us say, 6 or 9 months ago, right? Or 1 year ago. We are pretty confident that we'll get through in the tender and, you know, effectively pays back the asset at the end of the contract, if we do get the contract. So basically, it wipes out most of the risk.
Okay. And I have a question on this crude carriers and product tankers. Okay, the order book is the lowest. Okay. And in crude, we have a very old fleet also. Some of them are 18, 19 years old. And are we getting opportunity to get good rates for 1 or 2 year charter, or we will like to be in spot only, even if it's whatever time we have with these ships? So any thoughts on that?
So on the older assets, it's very difficult to place it out for long periods of time, simply because of the age. On the relatively younger two tankers, four tankers that we have, two Afras and two Suezmaxes, we could. But what we have seen, again, from previous experience, that, you know, whenever markets are tight, a sudden surge in demand for some cargoes tends to exaggerate the earnings. And obviously, keeping the vessels, not that we expected the market to do as well as it has done, but really we have significantly benefited from our overall policy that run everything spot, or as much as you can spot. And I think I've mentioned this in the past, that since we have a very conservatively leveraged balance sheet, and now indeed we are net debt, we may as well take risk through the operating leverage. Because, you know, think about it, that you could have fixed these assets 6 months ago or 1 year ago at very
hello.
Yeah,
the connection got disconnected, I think.
Yeah, we lost you for a moment, sir.
No, so the point I was making, Himanshu, can you hear me?
Yeah, now I can hear you.
Okay, so the point I was making, I'll just quickly repeat it, that, you know, we could have fixed some of these tankers, let's say, because a year ago, let's say our 2004-built vessel in the start of 22 was still 18 years old. And we could have fixed it at a remunerative level. But the average that that asset has earned compared to what we would have got for 12 months is almost 2x, right? And that's the thing about shipping, that you really want to keep as much of your operating capacity open and balance that out by running a very conservative balance sheet, so that you're never under pressure to take suboptimal decisions on operating, you know, on fixing the ships out. So I think, you know, that strategy has paid us very well, and I think we'll continue to hold on to that.
I have a question on policy decision at the company level. Okay, I think this is the first time in the last 20 years we have a net cash balance sheet. Okay, and what would be the policy or a process of how much cash you want to have on the balance sheet? Okay, and what would be the determinants of what percentage of balance sheet should be on cash? And because one of the things is, eventually this business is a 13-14% ROC, means longer term, what we state. And if we want to have a higher thing, we'll have some amount of leverage. But how all these things are playing in your mind, and how is that philosophy or a process on of cash on balance sheet you will decide, or what is the thought process there?
So, first of all, you know, when you say this is a 13-14% ROC business, it's not. It only is if you invest wisely. Because if it was, then you would not have so many shipping companies getting wiped out. And there are very, very few shipping companies that have been around 75 years, as Great Eastern is. So that's the first point, right? It's not as simple as you're making it sound. The second point is how much cash would we be comfortable with? I mean, if our cash reserves were to double, and therefore there would be a larger part of the balance sheet, we would have no qualms about it. Because the important thing is to deploy the capital wisely, right? So we look at, you know, for us, growth should come. Oh, can you hear me? There's a lot of
business. Yeah, yeah, I can hear you.
I'm sorry to interrupt, Mr. Himanshu Upadhyay. Can you please self-mute your line when the management is answering the question? Because there is a lot of disturbance from your line, sir. Thank you. Management, okay. You may please proceed ahead.
Yeah. So basically, the way we look at capital is, you know, we only want to deploy it as and when we think we have a reasonable probability of providing, you know, we've said this in the past, dollarized returns, and of course subject to interest rates, but we must be able to, on high probability, significantly outperform the cost of debt. Today the cost of debt, let's say, is around 6% in dollars. So unless we see a chance of making 10 to 15% dollar returns, we'd just rather sit on that cash. So we are not shy on how much cash we sit on. And remember, you got to take this capital into three buckets. One is just the risk capital, which the company always will keep as cash. One is replacement capital, because obviously there are ships that are getting old and they need replacement, and then you are just standing still, although you may be modernizing the fleet to an extent. And then the third bucket is the growth capital, which hopefully will take us from 40 plus ships today to 50, 60, 70 ships as and when the time is right. So until we think the time is right, and if in the meantime we have to build up cash, so be it.
Okay, one last question from my side. See, in offshore, was there some one-off for dry docking experience, dry docking, and hence the EBIT turned negative? And secondly, can you give an idea of how is the average rates for vessels and rigs be for us today versus 2 years back? In the same quarter, something like what we give in the average price of ships, how they have, on a base of 100, how they have moved, something, just to understand,
yeah.
Where are we?
So basic, no. So what happens is, you know, it's not right to comparing with shipping, because shipping averages are spot averages, right? In offshore, the averages are typically 1 year average or a 3 years. So you take the rig business. Right? You might have priced it, every time you priced a rig, it's been for 3 to 5 years. Correct? Unlike shipping, which is spot. Every day you're doing some fixture or the other. So that's more representative of averages than offshore. Having said that, if your question is compared to 2 years ago, if you had a rig that you were pricing 2 years ago versus pricing today, it's fair to say that it will probably be about 2.5 to 3x higher if you were pricing. If you were pricing a boat as well, and again, the boat is not as commoditized as ships are because they have different features, they operate in different jurisdictions, and they're expected to perform different tasks. So there again, I would say compared to 2 years ago, maybe the improvement is 2x, 2.5x.
This quarter's EBIT turning negative? Any?
No. So basically all that has happened was we had a rig that had to prepare itself for a new contract. So there were two hits that you take. One is the rig obviously is not earning, and that happened for most of October, November, and December. And you are also spending money to, you know, redeploy her in a new contract. So that's why you take a double hit between contracts. But
okay,
all that
thank you for my
is you have deferred it, you know, because obviously you'll have a start date and then you're now committed for the next 3 years. Thank you for my too much, and I would recommend to all listeners in not to place too much emphasis to all these quarterly things.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Roshan Nair from BNK Securities. Please go ahead.
Thanks for the opportunity. So my question was like the VLGC trade miles, is it expected to remain elevated for the coming years like tankers?
So on VLGC, the trade miles will broadly be where it had settled in Cal 22. I think the difference, of course, on the VLGCs is that that's one sector where the supply side is a little ahead of the in relation to where the conventional tankers are and where the conventional dry bulk business is.
Okay. And is Russia a big propane exporter?
I'm not sure. Shiv, do you have an answer to that?
I don't think so. Only LNG.
LNG.
Okay. And my next question is, would you like to give any guidance on offshore breaking even, given that it is decidedly in a much more positive environment right now?
So, you know, it's very difficult to give forward guidance. I think there was a caveat at the start of today's conference where we are reluctant to give a lot on forward guidance. All we can say is that every asset that we are repricing, be it the boat or be it the rig, are being repriced at higher levels than, let us say, 6 months ago. And obviously much higher levels than 1 and 2 years ago. So, you know, logically, obviously, you know, with some lag, the business will move into a profitable position.
Okay. Thanks a lot. That's all from me.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Vaibhav Badjatya from Honesty and Integrity Investment. Please go ahead.
Thanks for providing the opportunity. So you explained the fundamentals of the business in the presentation, but are you seeing any changes, obviously apart from the demand, apart any changes which can really affect the product and tankers market, apart from the seasonality, because I think recently there has been quite a lot decline in both the clean tanker and the dirty tanker index. So anything fundamentally that you are seeing any changes, or is it just seasonal and just one time?
So we think it is a little more seasonal, although this season it's got a little more exaggerated. But traditionally, if you see Jan and Feb tend to be weaker than November and December, right? Because with all the pre-stocking for the winter and all has already happened. And then, and also people then also do a lot of refinery maintenance in different parts of the world, typically in Jan and Feb, and then the refiners get back into action for the summer season. So if you just look at averages over the last many, many years, Jan, Feb are always a little weaker. Now, sometimes they are 15% weaker, sometimes they may be 20% weaker, sometimes they may be 10%, 30%. It's all over the place. I think that therefore I just said it to one of the previous participants that you should ignore these daily and weekly and monthly volatility. I think the important thing is that you've got a very tight market, as the CFO has just shown and highlighted on the supply side. And therefore any, improvement in demand can lead to, you know, very quick tightening of these markets, because 50% of the equation is resolved.
Got it. That's it from us. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Anurag Jain from Green Lantern Capital LLP. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks so much for the opportunity. Am I audible?
Yes.
Yeah, thank you so much. Just wanted to understand slide 18 in our presentation, which talks about the revenue coverage for Q4 quarter. So are we starting to go slightly long on the rates, as in covering our ships for slightly longer than what we used to do earlier? Is that how it should be there?
No.
Slide 18.
Not in this, it's the uploading version of the presentation, but Q4 is basically just these 3 months. So it's logical that you will have much more coverage when you only have 3 months left. The base itself is less.
Okay. And also maybe the fact that...
So when we talk of coverage, basically what we are talking about, if we are telling you in July, we are talking about the remaining 9 months of the FY. If we are telling you in October, we are telling you for 6 months. And we are telling you in January, we are telling you for the last 3 months. And therefore, by definition, same number of days on only 90 days per ship. So it will be to a higher number.
Okay. So, I mean, does that mean that, I mean, Jan, Feb, we've seen rates come off, but
yes,
these would have a slightly, I mean, higher rate because we fixed them for this quarter, something like that?
Yes. Some part of it would have got fixed. See, normally you would have, even if you're on voyages, you fix a 45-day voyage, you are covered for 50% of the quarter. That is for 50% coverage.
Got that. Yeah, thank you so much. The other question was on capital deployment. Are we finding opportunity?
Jen, I'm sorry to interrupt. Your voice is breaking, sir.
Sorry, is it better now?
Yes. Please go ahead.
Yeah. So just wanted to understand the other thing in terms of deployment of capital. Are we finding opportunities in any segment at all? I mean, for example, containers are down, dry bulk is down. Are there any opportunities at all there for deployment of capital, or these are sitting tight right now?
So I think we are getting closer to our target than we were obviously 6 months ago. As container prices, whilst they are down 70%, they are still significantly above where they were pre-COVID. Right? Dry bulk from the peak of this last cycle is down somewhere between 20% and 30%, but they are still at elevate because it's 20-30% from an elevated level. But as you can see from both these examples I've given, we are moving closer to our target. Obviously, we don't want to define exactly when we are likely to come in and buy.
Understood. So is it that for maybe next few quarters or for some period in time, our peak numbers are already there? In the sense, unless rates go up substantially higher from here, our peak in terms of profitability is already here. Is that a fair assessment?
Well, if rates don't go higher, obviously profits can't go higher.
Yeah, because so the capacity is
not likely to change. Right? At the moment. So on the same capacity, unless the per day earnings go up, how will this? Of course, what can happen is, like, let's say offshore will hopefully provide improvement in their own outlook as the repricing kicks in. So, but other than that, unless you expand the Q, the P into Q can't improve, right?
Absolutely. Sure. That's all from my side. Thank you so much. And congratulations on excellent set of numbers.
Thank you. So we have a question from in the text box. I'll just read out the question from Mr. Rajesh Khattar, individual investor. First question is, how much of the profit is contributed by crude carriers? Mr. Khattar, we don't talk about individual sectors. the profitability. We give the TC wise what we've earned, the day rates that we've earned for each of the types of ships, and you know, you can work that out from there, but we don't disclose that. How should we, the next question is, how should we interpret the operating days coverage mentioned on page 19? I have already answered that question just now. It's for the remaining days of this financial year. Next is, maximum fleet is in product carriers. What are the triggers for product carriers? Mr. Sheth, if you want to take that.
So the basic thing is, products is a arbitrage driven business, and it's you know, unlike crude, which is not that much driven by arbitrage. So the trade depends on what the margins, the refining margins are, where the refineries are, where are their shortages, and therefore it's a much more trader dominated business as compared to crude oil. And so the real demand for products, or the both absolute demand and ton-mile demand, is driven by where we see the best arbs going forward. And because the arbs are so very uncertain, typically traders have multiple options when they quote for the business. So it's very difficult to really say, you know, what else will drive demand other than arbs. And of course, the fact that, you know, how is the economy doing? Because a lot of the products are, the demand for products like gasoline, gas oil, is dependent on, you know, transportation demand, is dependent on manufacturing demand. Jet oil, jet fuel is dependent on people wanting and willing to travel again post-COVID, particularly. We are seeing, you know, there is a lot of vengeance traveling that the Chinese are talking about. They haven't been able to travel for the last 2 years, and we believe that's going to lead to a lot more demand for jet fuel. So it's different product demand is driven by different factors.
Yeah, and the last question is, how has January been? I assume what the spot markets are doing in January.
So January, typically, you mean for products, crude? What is the question?
No, this is in general.
So for January, again, you know, every season, January typically tends to be weaker than, as I just said to one of the earlier participants, Jan, Feb are typically weaker than November, December. We are seeing a similar trend of that. Both in tankers as well as in dry bulk. There is no reason to believe that that trend will change. And then we start seeing improvement from the month of March. Obviously, we are, you know, 1.5 months away, one full month away from March, but there is no reason to believe that that trend will not continue.
Yeah. Okay. I think we can go back to the voice questions to you.
Yeah.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Samraj N. from Dwarka Share Brokers Private Limited. Please go ahead.
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, thanks for taking my question. So, since Mr. Shiv said that we are very close to OPEX on the bulker side, I just wanted to ask you, sir, if you take the... what's the all-in break-even if you take the G&A and the this one finance expenses? So can we presume that on the bulker side we were negative on the net? If you take the on the net side,
no,
we are talking about currently, not last quarter.
No. Even if you just take currently, you see, you've got to have a vessel that is in the spot market. So if you take you have to take average earnings. So there are some vessels which you might have fixed 40 days ago, some vessels you have fixed 6 months ago, some you have fixed 1 week ago, like that. So if your question is the dry bulk division EBITDA positive, the answer is yes. It's EBITDA positive, even today.
Okay, and currently the VLCCs are under pressure to take the AG West Coast route. So is this also rubbing off on the Aframaxes and Suezmaxes rates?
Not to the same extent as I've just explained to somebody else that January, February as an average earnings typically tend to be lower than November, December. So, you know, each of the sectors' average earnings today are lower than what they were in the previous 2 months.
Okay.
But they are still at incredibly profitable levels.
Incredibly profitable. Okay. So, and my last thing, just on the sideline of the conference, since you have such a wide knowledge on shipping industry, sir, don't you think Shipping Corporation of India is the cheapest shipping stock going on now? Especially if you take the cover of its real estate, which is 1.5 times more than the current price. And if you take the entire fleet, NAV is coming free of cost. What's your comment, sir, if you could just give a general view on that?
Honestly, I have not studied it, so I can't give you a comment on Shipping Corporation. I haven't done any homework on it.
Okay, so thanks all. That's all from our side, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Rajesh Khattar, an individual investor. Please go ahead.
Hello, am I audible?
Yes.
Yeah, hi. You have already taken some of my questions from the chat, and I have already written the next set of questions on the chat, but I will just read them out. So, one question is on the dividend payout. You have given excellent dividend in this year, which works out to be the highest dividend ever in the history of the company. But the dividend payout ratio works out to 15%. So as a policy, how much payout ratio does the company want to maintain?
Sorry. I think, broadly speaking, our payout ratio will be somewhere between 15 and 20%, give and take. That's, you know, the current thinking. These things can change. But I think that's where we are at the moment, somewhere in that range. It's always a function also. Obviously, you won't do a 15% payout ratio if your profit is, just for argument's sake, say 10 crores, right?
Yeah, okay.
I mean, then you'll draw from your reserves and so on and so forth. So.
Yeah, okay. My next question is, like, on the gas carriers, you have the fleet with the highest average age. So when do you plan to sell the older ones?
No, we still have plenty of life on the gas carriers. So there is no immediate plan to sell anything. As you know, gas carriers tend to have a longer life than conventional tankers. So there is no plan whatsoever at this stage to sell any of the gas carriers.
So how much longer life they typically have? Like, is it like easily close to 20 to 23 years?
Oh, much, much more.
27.
So, yeah. Okay. If you see, the company's depreciation policy is 27.
Okay.
But they go up to 30 also. We have seen ships trade up to 30.
Yeah. Yes.
So, you are nowhere close to selling of your ships due to aging in any of your segments, right? Or is any of the segment approaching the use-by date and you will have to look at selling some of them?
So, we don't have to look at selling anything at this stage. But obviously, as time progresses, let's say 12, 24 months, then some of the vessels will be hitting, you know, not necessarily the end of their life, but what we are now seeing is private terminals, and certain ports and customers are reluctant to take very old ships. Of course, in a tight market like today, they all make concessions. But in a more normalized market, then the utilization levels of some of these older vessels come off. But what you should never forget is that these older vessels sometimes give you the best return on capital. Or on book value, let's put it that way.
Okay. I have just last two questions. One is, can you share the email ID for investor queries? If we want to reach out between the quarterly con calls, how can we reach out?
Yeah, you can find that on our website. You can find that on our website. It's corp_com@greatship.com. But it's on our website if you go to the contact us page.
Okay. Just can you repeat that? corp_com@greatship.com. Okay.
And
okay.
If any doubts on it, just go to the contact us page. You'll find it there.
Okay. Then you have already explained about the coverage of operating days, twice you have explained, but I am still not clear on how to interpret, let's say, if you can give an example, you have mentioned crude carriers coverage is 50%.
Yeah, that's right. So there are 90 days. So let's say that you only have one ship, okay, and you fix it for, and let's say that you keep fixing it for 45-day voyages. Okay? If you look at it on 1st April, 2022, and you're looking for FY23, your coverage is 45 divided by 365, which is 12.5%.
Right. Right.
If you look at it on 1st July 2022, it is 45 upon 270, which is 16%, or whatever that number is. Yeah.
Okay. Understood. Understood.
Yeah. Okay. So if you look, now you're looking at it as 45 on 90, which is 50%.
Okay. So that means your LPG carriers are all booked out for the whole quarter.
Are all on time charter.
Okay. So, okay, this does not indicate whether this is on spot.
No. This is weather spot. So if you have done a 45-day voyage, that counts as a coverage.
Mr. Khattar, does that answer the question?
I think we may have lost.
As there is no response, we'll move to the next question, which is from the line of Amit Ketan from Labanam Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks for the follow-up. I just had a clarification on the offshore segment. So the rig that we have repriced, is my understanding correct that it's currently off contract and not earning anything? And this goes
no,
into
no,
contract.
It is on contract. No. It is on contract.
Okay.
Right? But it is on the older rate contract.
Yeah.
Now, there was a tender which allowed us to participate in it. So when we, when the old contract terminates, which is in the second half of calendar of this year, this calendar year, 23,
yeah,
the new rate will apply when it renews its contract.
Okay, understood.
It's earning money.
Okay, so basically all our rigs are currently earning money. It's just that one of the rigs is on the older contract. It will get repriced,
It has already been repriced.
Yeah.
But that earning, the repriced improved earning will kick in when she enters the new contract. But all the four rigs are earning money.
Got it. Perfectly understood. Thanks.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Anurag Jain from Green Lantern Capital. Please go ahead.
Thanks so much for the opportunity again. Just wanted a quick, thought, your thoughts on this. So somebody did ask about STI as a company. Would STI be a good asset and it's on the divestment list. So would that be an asset you would evaluate for a buyout or something?
No, we are not in contention, so we didn't put in that expression of interest. So we are not.
Is something of an asset that you don't like? Is that why? Is that so? Or?
No, we had multiple reasons which we don't obviously want to discuss on the call, but it was a decision that was collectively taken that we'd rather grow on our own.
Perfect. That's all. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
So we have text question. Sorry. We have a text question from Nikhil Jain of Zonpro. He says, why do you think product rates have fallen so much? The next question is, what will be the impact of the ban on Russian clean products on ton miles? And third question is, China buying a lot of Russian crude, thereby reducing ton miles?
So,
the first question is, why do you think rates have fallen so much?
So, you know, typically, again, I've said this before, January just is always weaker than December. It's typically the time of the year when there is a lot of refinery maintenance going on and a lot of the alleges get filled up between November and December in anticipation of the winter season. So then there is a less immediate requirement for, you know, requiring that product, especially the heating end of the product. And it's just a few less cargoes that then determine what happens to the markets. Markets tend to exaggerate. And I think we have seen in the past, we've seen data which tends to support that every incremental cargo increases the rate by between 10 and 20%. And every one less cargo reduces the rate by then. But, you know, you just have a few less cargoes and then ships quickly build up and so on and so forth. But these things turn on a dime. And we have seen this happen in October of 22, where between October and November, on average, the average of October and the average of November, the market went up 3x in just 30 days. So, again, I think I shared with one of the other participants, you know, seriously ignore these daily, weekly, monthly earnings.
The next question was on what could be the impact on the ban on Russian clean products.
So, the ban that kicks in on the 5th of February, we've got to see whether there is a market for the Russian products. Obviously, unlike crude oil, where India and China were the big beneficiaries and were the big purchasers of Russian crude, that's not going to be the case for products. But there is talk in the marketplace that the product could find itself to Africa, where there is a product shortage. It could find its way to Latin America, where there is a product shortage, but we don't know yet because the absolute date hasn't kicked in. Obviously, if the Russians fail to find a market for its products, it means they will almost certainly get compelled to reduce their refining runs. Once they reduce the runs, then obviously there's less product to move. So that too can happen. So we just have to wait and watch.
Yeah. The last question was, is China buying a lot of Russian crude, thereby reducing ton miles? Probably referring to either pipeline or eastern.
No, so basically China has been buying a lot of Russian crude. Throughout, it's not as if they're buying more now and they were buying less earlier. And in spite of China buying Russian crude, we've seen close to a 9% year-on-year improvement in ton-mile demand for crude oil. And this is in spite of China buying Russian crude. So I wouldn't say that is obviously, if they were not buying the Russian crude through pipelines, then the 9% would have gone up even further.
Yeah. Okay. I think that's all the questions in text. Yeah.
Are there any further questions on audio?
We don't have any more questions in the queue, sir.
Great.
Okay.
Would you like to give any closing remarks, Mr.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, everyone. The transcript and the audio of this call will be uploaded on our website in the next couple of days. As always, we are available for your queries. Contact details are on our website. So, we please contact us if you have any requirements.
Thank you all. Thank you.
On behalf of the Great Eastern Shipping Company Limited, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines.